courtesy of Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl Ryder on the show. Daryl, how the hell are you tonight, my friend?
What's going on, Daryl?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Can't complain. Just getting into it over Jameis Winston and the future quarterback for the Browns and whether or not they should tear it all down to the studs or not. And I guess I'll start with the quarterback conversation with you, Daryl, because one thing we discussed was this idea that, listen, if they're benching Jameis Winston now, it kind of feels like they've seen all they need to see. Does this, you think, shut the door on potentially bringing him back next year as a bridge quarterback?
Oh, yeah. I don't foresee Jameis coming back. And look, let's be honest about it. The Jameis Winston experience is everything that we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
He gives you as much chance of winning as much as he helps you lose. He throws as many interceptions as he does touchdowns. So, you know, the decision to bench him Sunday, followed by the decision to replace him in the starting lineup with DTR, not the least bit surprising.
Daryl, when you look at then Kevin Stefanski, and I mean the idea to bench Jameis for DTR, I we had talked prior about it, like DTR probably already know what you have with him a little bit. Like, what was the connection like between those two guys in the locker room from everything that at least you could see? Because it looks like a benching that comes a little bit early with not a lot on the line.
Well, it's not so much that, I mean, there's nothing on the line. Like, the season's been over for 2 months, so there's nothing on the line. It doesn't matter who starts at quarterback Sunday. This change basically gives them an opportunity to take an extended look at DTR, who has not really had many opportunities where he actually gets to prepare week in and week out for opponents. Typically, he comes in a relief role. They are what they are. They are where they are. And, you know, I wouldn't read a whole lot into this move other than this gives them a chance to look at DTR in this setting. I don't think it affects anything regarding next year as far as him potentially competing for a starting job. If anything, it lets them know whether or not DTR can be their QB2.
Well, off of that, Dare, I was going to ask, is this also maybe with DTR starting, if he struggles or if he sort of just shows you the same thing he's shown all of us to this point, is it also
by the way, is not much, let's be honest about it.
Well, and that's kind of what I'm getting at here, because could this also be like an audition that ends with the Browns realizing, okay, DTR really isn't something that we can build around, and maybe even signaling that they changed the entire quarterback room other than Deshaun, because we know he's going to kind of be here. But could it also almost be like the end of DTR's time here in Cleveland?
Yeah, it could. I think that, you know, when you draft a quarterback in the fifth round, you're kind of taking a little bit of a flyer on a guy, seeing if you can develop him into something. I mean, look, the New England Patriots, when they had Tom Brady, they still drafted quarterbacks. And then, you know, they would go ahead and flip those guys for draft assets. So, but if he does not play well here in these three games, he is what he is. I think the Browns know exactly what they got in the guy.
Yeah.
He's been here 2 years. They've been exposed to him for two seasons in meeting rooms and the practice field and training camp and off-season programs. I don't know that there's many questions that need to be answered regarding him other than just, hey, let's get 180 minutes of it on film to really, you know, break down live game action. But I don't think that there's a lot of mystery here where the Browns are concerned as far as what they have in him. Or no, I should say, they have in him.
So then if we're going under the assumption essentially that these last three games aren't going to show us anything with DTR, it'll leave the back half of the season essentially being a more offensive, productive, heavy version of what it was at the beginning of the season, which is just a disappointment. How much of that then can you look at this team and blame this season then on Deshaun Watson, being that it didn't matter who the Browns essentially started, they were always going to, in some capacity, be a disappointment and fail?
Well, obviously Deshaun deserves blame. The coaching staff deserves blame. The players deserve blame. The entire team deserves blame. The coaches can't go out and line up for them correctly. The coaches can't throw, run, catch the football for them. They can't block. They can't tackle. They can't hit the right gaps. They can't be in the right coverages. Like, at some point, there needs to be accountability within the locker room. And I think that Myles Garrett alluded to that a little bit last week in his comments. He talked about dysfunction on the team, talked about guys not being on the same page. He talked about guys not raising the standard of their play, resting on their laurels from last year, and not doing what it takes to take the next step and get better. And so as a result, they haven't just regressed. I mean, they've gone back to laughing stocks. So I think that at some point the accountability has to fall on the 53-man roster, which, by the way, paid very, very handsomely, okay? It is one of the most expensive teams in NFL history, and this is what you got for it. You got 3-11. So Deshaun Watson or no Deshaun Watson, and look, I think that guy's a cancer to begin with, and he's a cancer in the locker room, and I don't think that the players respond to him in a very positive way, certainly not in the way that we've seen them respond to other quarterbacks. And so they got to figure that out. That's one of Andrew Berry's biggest failings as a general manager, is his ability to put the right pieces and parts together, his ability to do proper research on guys and what makes them tick and how they're going to fit in a locker room, how they're going to fit on a football field. Do they even care about what they're doing? Do they love the game of football? Or is this just a job to them? Like, those are things you can't quantify on a spreadsheet. On the stuff that can be quantified on a spreadsheet, the Browns are, they're Ivy Leaguers, pun intended. They're a bunch of geniuses. But in the stuff that you can't quantify on spreadsheets, they're clueless. And that is a massive, massive problem they need to address and they need to solve going into the next offseason here.
Daryl Ryder, our Browns insider, joining us on the show. Along the lines, as you bring up Andrew Berry and you bring up Kevin Stefanski, we know what Jimmy Haslam was quoted as saying to ESPN last week about how basically everyone's getting a mulligan and he's not going to be over emotional and reactionary to the way the season has gone, even though it's been perplexing. Still, though, like 3 weeks.
It's perplexing to him, not to me. We could sit here for hours and break down why this team stinks and they're 3-11. It's right there. And by the way, I don't. Just go rewatch Sunday's game against Kansas City. Right there.
Oh, I did.
Well, so did I. But right there, those 60 minutes on the field tell you why the Cleveland Browns are 3-11.
Yeah.
There is no mystery about this. It's not perplexing to me. And so it shouldn't be perplexing to them. It's in plain black and white why this team is where it is and why they're as terrible as they are and why they're the failure that they are.
So off of that, Daryl, It 3 weeks does still feel like an eternity for something to go so haywire.
Oh yeah, this can't get over fast enough.
Well, and I guess my point in this is, like, I understand that he was saying last week that everybody's safe and they're running it back, but is there some sort of catastrophic thing that could happen that would change that conversation and maybe make him reconsider and actually blow this thing up?
Is this where I remind you that quotes to reporters are not sworn testimony?
You're not wrong.
I always call an owner's vote of confidence in a season, I always call it the kiss of death. Because I can't tell you the last time I heard one of those where people didn't get fired. So I wouldn't be feeling too secure if I'm Andrew Berry or Kevin Stefanski right now. Now, I'm not saying that Jimmy Haslam lied. I'm not saying that that was not genuinely his thought, his feeling, his perception. in the moment. Okay, don't misunderstand, but things can change. And over, you know, it'll be four games, final four games here. Things can change. Feelings can change. Perception can change, yeah. Right? So I'm not saying it's the kiss of death, but it wouldn't shock me because anytime an owner, and it doesn't matter the sport. This isn't like a Jimmy Haslam thing. This is like in sports in general. When owners back their people in the middle of just epic failures of seasons, typically somebody gets fired in the end. And I'm not saying that's going to happen in this case, but like if they don't win another game, 3-14, I don't know. Like, I don't know how these people can sell it to your fans who have been used and abused for 26 seasons that fought to get this team back. This franchise has given them nothing in 26 seasons. Okay? That's why I call them the Charlie Browns, because that's what they are. You know, the first iteration
from
1940.
Who's Lucy pulling the ball out from underneath them?
I think that's Dustin Hopkins.
Yeah. No, actually, that's Corey Bojorquez, I think. He's the guy holding it, right? But in all seriousness, from 1946 to 1995, they were the Paul Browns. Team was named after Paul Brown. Excellence personified, minus the Super Bowl trophies, right? But since this team has come back, they're the Charlie Browns. They're, at times, the lovable loser. They're, at times, the underdog that you pull for. At times, they're their worst enemy. And they do some of the dumbest stuff imaginable, and you just sit there and laugh at how stupid they are. That's Charlie Brown. And so that's why I call them the Charlie Browns, because they are at times their own worst enemy, and it's comedic, it's sad, it's tragic, it's frustrating, and I feel for Browns fans. I really do, because I don't think that there's a quick fix to this thing. They're not going to be contenders next year. They're not. And not until they find a franchise quarterback. They are cooked. They are dead men walking until that happens. Deshaun Watson ain't it. They took a shot, swung and missed, and it was a big swing and a miss. So now they got to find the next guy. I don't know who number 40 is. They're 39 deep, even with DTR. I don't know who number 40 is going to be, but I'm willing to bet that number 40 ain't going to be the savior either. So the question is, how many more of these guys we got to go before the Browns find their franchise quarterback? And that, until they do that, they're dead where they stand. You might get a mediocre season here or there. You might get something like last year comes out of, you know, nowhere and against all odds. But notice they didn't go anywhere in the playoffs. Like, until they find the franchise quarterback, it doesn't matter. They're not going to be competitive. So that has to be their mission. And they made it their mission a couple years ago, and they blew it. And now they got a contract and a situation that they cannot get out of. They are stuck with it. They reap what they sow. And as soon as they get out from underneath that, they've got to find that franchise quarterback. And it's easy for me to say, but, I mean, they've been searching for it since Bernie. They've been searching for it since Brian Sipe. They've been searching for it since Otto Graham. Like, you got to find that special transcendent player that can elevate your franchise, elevate your team, that guys want to play with and play for. And until they do that, man, we are going to just keep having the same discussions over and over and over again. And again, I really do feel for Browns fans. I do.
Well, I'm not trying to insinuate that this name I'm going to throw out there is the franchise quarterback. And maybe this
stopgap.
Maybe this is, yeah, that's probably fair. Okay. A bridge, like we were talking about with Jameis. But does the name.
The bridge to nowhere? That's what we're going to call Browns quarterbacks now.
Does the name.
The bridge to nowhere. Because they never go anywhere.
Does the name Kirk Cousins do anything in terms of maybe making fans feel better about how next year could play out if they were to acquire?
Perfect number. Bring him in. Do it. Sign him. I smell it worst 6-11.
Well, that's a vote of confidence. Is that
well?
That's
an improvement over this year, right? Six is greater than three. You W win talk.
Hey, they still have three games, Daryl. They could get to six wins.
Well, let's see. I don't think they're winning Sunday. The game I think they're going. I actually do think the Browns are going to win a game here. They're going to beat Miami. Got flexed out. the nation has been spared Browns football on a Sunday night. But the Dolphins don't play well in cold weather. I think they're 0 for the century in games when it's under 40 degrees. There's a little sarcasm in there, but I'm not all that wrong. Supposed to be cold. So I think that's the game the Browns win will be the Dolphins game, and they finish the season at 4-13.
Just like we all expected.
Daryl, so we were playing off the idea of Kevin Stefanski, essentially, like the mind could change. Would you say that the path then for the Browns to try to get back towards the top, if Kevin Stefanski and maybe Andrew Berry weren't here, changes? Like, they want to be competitive next year. If you sort of clear house on those guys, does that change with that idea then?
No. I don't think Kevin Stefanski's the problem. I can sit here, I can be critical of Kevin, and I can point some areas in which I think he's been deficient this year as a head coach, but I still feel like he's a good head coach. They could fire him tomorrow. He'd have a job the very next day as a head coach. I think he's a good coach. And the, similar to quarterbacks, Browns have been looking for one of them for a while, too. And so I don't feel like Kevin Stefanski's the problem. Andrew Berry's a little different story. I'm conflicted on Andrew. I like him personally. I like him professionally. I think he's made some good moves. Jerry Jeudy's worked out well. The Amari Cooper trade, you know, overall ended up being a positive. But he's also, you know, the next free agent safety that he signs and gives good money to that comes in here and actually plays up to the contract will be the first. He's kind of hodgepodge patched the defensive line together with Myles Garrett the last couple years. And that's been somewhat effective. It's not been great, but it's been somewhat effective. Jadeveon Clowney, Za'Darius Smith, the offensive line, for the most part, he's extended guys that should be extended. But, the Elijah Moore trade, not what I was expecting for a second-round draft pick. The two first-round draft picks, Greg Newsome and Jed Wills, he got playing time out of those guys. Jed's obviously not going to be back. Decision will have to be made at some point on Greg's future. Not 100% sure he's getting a second contract. So, not a lot to write home with when it comes to draft picks outside of JOK, maybe Mamu Diabate, who has, you know, really kind of come on here. We thought MJ Emerson is a player, and then this year he's not been great. So there's not a lot to sell folks on staying the course with Andrew Berry as the guy picking the players. But Kevin Stefanski is the guy coaching the players. I really can make a solid case for, and again, I don't feel like Kevin Stefanski is the problem, even though I can once again point out some areas in which I think he's been deficient and his team has really been deficient.
He's Daryl Ryder, our Browns insider, brought to you by Chapman Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Well said on everything, Daryl, and we will catch up some more tomorrow, my man. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
I think Sunday was like his breaking point. When the Browns have a bad season, he gets to this point where he's just like, he doesn't care anymore. He feels like he has nothing to lose. He's gonna speak his mind. He's gonna let it go. He's just gonna riff, and whatever happens within reason. I don't think he like blacks out and like says things he regrets necessarily, but he just like he says things eloquently in a assertive way. And I think he calls it like he sees it. And yeah, there's a lot wrong with this organization right now. He seems to be in the same camp as you, that it's going to take more than just like finding a replacement temporary quarterback to fix this thing. Like they probably have to strip it down to the studs. What we ran out of time to ask him was, what's the point of, I understood what he was saying about Kevin Stefanski, and I'm 100% with him. I don't think Kevin Stefanski is the problem. I think he's the solution here. But I wanted to follow up to that last answer on like, even if that's true, what's the point of bringing him back if the idea here is that you have to find a franchise quarterback and a year from now they might miss the playoffs and he'll get fired anyway, and then you are stripping everything down to the studs?
I think the idea is that you keep him around hoping that he finds it. Obviously, like, you're not employing the guy for life or anything, but like,
but the time frame they have to do that is like really limited. You get one draft class basically to figure it out, and you don't even know like what pick you're going to have yet. You're saying maybe there's 2 years left that he gets to figure it out?
If Jimmy's willing to go into the idea of like, hey, I know it might not look pretty this upcoming year, I'm not saying you're done. Like, we extended you last season. I'll give you at least next year and the year after. If you don't figure it out by then, if you don't have the guy by then what am I doing? Like, then why am I keeping you around?
To give him a third year, because even if you say they draft Arch Manning, are they starting Arch Manning day one? I mean, I guess you would.
I would hope so. What's your other option?
Yeah, I guess you would.
Right? You go see if he's the guy. Go show me you got the guy. Yeah. All right, Arch.
Can you imagine? People are turning off the radio right now. Spencer, shut the hell up.
Prime mentor for Arch Manning, Deshaun Watson, teaches him how to be a quarterback in the NFL.
Just the guy you want.
Worked really well for DTR so far.
And maybe that is where their heads are at. It's like, we see this being like a long-term thing, but I'm just like, I'm looking at it. If Darryl's right, like if this is going to be bad before it gets good again, they could be just as bad next year. They could have like, okay, so let's say they improve slightly with Kirk Cousins as their quarterback and they have six wins, a job-saving season for Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry.
Well, what's that point for you? What saves Kevin Stefanski? Because like, I think you brought back Jameis. You probably won like 7 or 8 games. Is that costing him his job? If you brought back Jameis, you won 7 or 8 games with the idea he's a bridge quarterback, then you're right. What's the point of bringing him back?
I guess it depends on what the six wins looks like. If it's 6 wins, but like the team's super competitive and you just like come up short because you don't have a good quarterback and you're throwing interceptions late in a game or something, then I don't necessarily put that on Kevin Stefanski. But if it's a 6-win season where they're still committing all these penalties and they're undisciplined and there's still some of the same like coaching errors and like play calling errors and just the same problems persist, or if like they draft more players that look like they're not going to be much of anything, like that at least spells, I think, trouble for Andrew Berry, maybe not Kevin Stefanski. Maybe that's how they view it. Maybe it's Stefanski maybe has a longer lease than Andrew Berry, and then he would get to pick the next GM that comes in or something like that. But I don't know. It's an interesting conversation, but yeah, I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I don't think there's, like, if you view Kevin Stefanski as the solution, what's the idea to run him out of town?
To be clear, I don't think like it's like an ultimatum situation. Like, I don't think Jimmy Haslam saying what he said last week to ESPN with like this caveat of like, next year's your last chance. Like, I'm not saying that. I think the chips will fall where they may, and then he'll make a determination. But I just do think it's kind of interesting that we're all talking about like, let's keep these guys, or not, I guess not everybody, because there are people who want them fired. But if we think that they should maybe get another shot at this because they were handicapped by a quarterback decision that maybe they didn't even get the full say in, then if they're in the same boat next year, what was even the point of keeping them around this year? Might as well just trigger that rebuild now.
I just think you look at what you have right now. Like, what is the point of going in with Kevin Stefanski, though, and then just being like, all right, you had a bad year, you're gone. Like, who are you getting in the up-and-coming ranks of the football? Like, you think Mike Vrabel's coaching this team to a much better record?
Maybe.
The thing with Mike Vrabel is you have to have an OC to go with him, which he really didn't have in Tennessee. Like, it's not like he has a guy that follows him around who's his elite offensive coordinator either.
Ryan Day.
Oh, yeah, that'll solve things. Pair those two up. What could go wrong? No, like, I mean, I like Vrabel. I just don't think everyone wants to react and be like, fire the coach, fire the coach, fire the coach. Like, sorry to break it to you, most of the head coaches that like get put in a spot and get hired don't succeed all that well. Like, you obviously get guys who do, but a lot of the new head coaches just aren't in that spot. It's not like you have a guy waiting in the wings. It's not like you have Ken Dorsey who's sitting in your staff and you're like, let me get that guy as my head coach. It's not sitting there. Kevin's done better for you than just about everybody has that has coached for the Browns and has been dealt, by the way, the worst hand possible.
Listen, I'm not anti-Kevin, but that is not necessarily a reason just to keep a guy either.
No.
Like, you don't just keep a guy because he's been better than the other previous mistakes that you've made at the head coaching hires. But I don't think he's the problem right now. I agree with you.
You handed the dude garbage. I mean, you handed him garbage to work with. Like, he's dealt with Baker Mayfield and Deshaun as his quarterback.
To put a bow on this, it's going to be frustrating if he does get fired at some point because his fatal flaw will be not making it work with a quarterback that he maybe didn't even have full say in choosing. It sounds like, I know Albert Breer was on earlier and he talked about this, like, he thinks Kevin was part of the chorus of people saying we need to move on from Baker because they thought he was too mature and they didn't want to pay him. But that didn't necessarily mean that, like, Deshaun was going to be the perfect fit, and I've wondered about the fit from the beginning. I continue to ask the questions about why they paired those two together. Do you care about the NBA Cup tonight, Jake? We just turned the TVs over to the game here in studio.
Care,
are you watching? Are you Are you invested in this game more than just betting on it?
No, not really. Like, if the Cavs were in it, 100%, but, like, watching two teams compete
so
for it.
So it does matter, then, because if the Cavs were in it, you'd be excited about
it. Yeah, no, it matters. I'm just saying from, like, a Cleveland perspective of somebody who, like, I like watching NBA.
But it's not like the NBA Finals. Like, you would turn on the NBA Finals even if your team wasn't in it and, like, watch.
I would probably consider the NBA Cup Finals here to be, like, background. Like, I might do something with the NBA Cup Finals in the background, like we're doing right now. I don't think I would be dying, like, having to sit down on my couch in front of my TV to watch this.
Are Bucks fans doing that right now? Are they, like...
They should be. Why not? You get to win something, don't you?
It just feels like there's been some wind taken out of the sails. I think the biggest thing is they need to fix this schedule, like, around this tournament. I understand they're trying to highlight those games, but, like, giving the other teams in the league, like, a week off and then like a whole nother week off, it just doesn't seem like the best thing for your product. Again, you're trying to make this a thing. You're trying to make this exciting. You're trying to make it matter. I get all that, but I feel like there was a lot of momentum, especially in Cleveland, building around the NBA season, and then it just feels like this last 2 weeks it's come to like a screeching halt because your teams have just been all over the place, like resting on a buys, not playing at all. And I get, like, it's not even the peak time of year. Everyone's always like, when the calendar changes, that's when I'll start watching basketball. I get it. But I also feel like Christmas is kind of like the symbolic start of, like, the NBA season for a lot of people. It's like, oh, there's games on Christmas. I know the NFL is now invading that, but I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, at least they gave you a great product to watch in the games that they did play that they had to schedule. You got the Washington Wizards and the Brooklyn Nets. Congratulations.
Wait, that's a Christmas game?
No. Those were the games that the Cavs scheduled in lieu of missing the NBA Cup. Like,
well, you're bound to get bad teams on your schedule when it's the NBA Cup because some of the good teams made the NBA Cup.
You got a 2-week break, basically, with two games shoved in the middle. That is the Washington Wizards and
Brooklyn
Nets.
Hey, we'll take the easy
Brooklyn
wins, Nets. Though.
No doubt, but I don't know that there was a lot of people tuning in for that. Like, that was not the thing that was going to get people to be like, oh, got to turn on my TV, look at the Cavs playing the Wizards tonight.
Speaking of the NBA calendar, it's been an exciting start to the season for the Cavaliers. And I think when they were off to the 15-0 start, everybody was jazzed talking about this team maybe winning a title. Are you still in that line of thinking, or has that cooled off to a point where you're like, well, it's only December, I still need to see more before I buy the Cavaliers as title contenders? 216-474-0092. We'll debate it next. We got Greg Swartz of Bleacher Report set to join us at 9 o'clock as well. Keep it locked. Spencer German, Jake Volnick with you on The Fan.
Jordan Schultz reporting that the Falcons are going to start rookie Michael Penix on Sunday against the Giants, benching Kirk Cousins.
It's all happening as I anticipated. By the way, I messed up the cap figures for Kirk Cousins. His base salary in 2025 is actually $27.5 million. So it's a lot more than I thought. But, again, people who want to jump in and be like, they can't make that work on the books. There's no way. Guys, they literally, like, kicked a bajillion dollars of Deshaun Watson's deal down the road. They can do this with everybody. Like, anybody who still calls in and says, there's no way they can pay that guy, there's no way they can take on his contract, look around. Look what teams do every single year. They always find ways to make it work. I'm just saying.
Spencer, the rate they're going at, you and I might have to sign for the 2029 season. That's about to be what they can afford. It's a low bar.
Man, 2029, though, a new era in a new facility, a new dome, when the new facility is going to open up. So
I was starting right guard.
So by then, they have a franchise quarterback.
I was a starting right guard in middle school. Watch out.
Could you do it now in the NFL?
Have you seen me? The answer is yes, you have seen me. No, I could not do it right now in the NFL. I wouldn't make it through one day of practice in the NFL.
That felt like a trap. I didn't want to say, yes, I've seen you, and then be like, oh, so you think I'm a fat ass? Is that what you're like? I didn't really know what to say. Disarming question because I could have said, yes, I've seen you. You could play guard, and then you'd be like, oh, so I'm fat. Or I'd say, no, I haven't seen you, and you'd be like, well, I'm sitting right across you. That doesn't make any sense. So I just kind of said nothing and made noise with my mouth. So we asked the question because it's not that I think people don't think the Cavs can win a title. That's not what I'm trying to get out here. But I feel like there's a lot more momentum at the beginning of the season for people who are like all in on the Cavs are going to be this team. They have a shot. They're going to be the top team in the Eastern Conference. And they still are the top team in the Eastern Conference. And I do think some of like the layoff here for the NBA Cup has maybe added to this. I don't want to say it's apathy. It's definitely not apathy. But it just feels like the conversation around the Cavs has kind of changed a little bit. And as more people start, I joked about January sort of being the month where more people start getting more in tune with the NBA. There always is this thing with this team of like, I got to see what they do in the playoffs, right? And so, you know, it's all fun when it's the new season and the team's winning. And it's easy to like just go on social media and be like, this team's so fun. They're going to win the title and whatever and just kind of throw it out there. But as you get down to like brass tacks and the calendar flips over and they start on a West Coast trip, are we convinced at this point that the Cavaliers truly are title contenders, or are you taking a wait and see approach sort of to the rest of the season as they flip to January and it starts to get, you know what, starts to get real, we'll say.
So it's a, like, what do you consider title contenders, I guess, would be the baseline for that. Like, do they have to be a top two team in the
like,
East?
Like, do they have a chance to emerge out of the Eastern Conference? I'm not saying they will, but, like, do they have a legitimate shot at being the team that comes out of the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, I think you're dumb right now if you say anything else. Of course they do. They beat the Celtics in an NBA Cup game. They were playing the Celtics neck and neck, and we know both teams were going, like, all out for that game to the point where they could. Why not? Like, you watch this team all regular season. Like, yes, it's a regular season in the NBA. You want to see it in the playoffs, yeah. But you still got to play 82 games. They're still showing you something right now. It's not like you're just basically on cruise control until you get to the playoffs.
For sure. Well, and I'll say this. Like, anybody that thought the first 15 games was like some fluke or whatever, I think they've proven that that wasn't the case. Because they've sustained this thing and the momentum. Like, they're still blowing out bad teams as they should. Like, they're still playing at an otherworldly pace. They're still top. They're the number one team, I believe, in offensive efficiency. And they're still top 10 in defensive rating. And offensive rating is what I meant to say there. Like, they're still a superb team in this league. And when you have those types of numbers, you should be in that conversation. But I do think there are some, and maybe it's more a national level, it's not locally, there are still some people who are taking that wait-and-see approach, I think, and they're like, well, I got to see the Cavs do it against the Knicks. I got to see the Cavs do it in the postseason. I still think they're that team that got punked by New York a couple seasons ago. And I do think Cavaliers fans at times fall into that trap of, this is all very fun right now, but I don't know if I trust them in the playoffs yet because every time I have, they go seven games with Orlando, or they can't get over the Celtics in the second round, or they get gentlemen swept by the Knicks. Like, it is still sort, they still are sort of on this path of that next step in the process, right? Like, I know these things aren't always linear, but we always think about it that way, where it's like, well, one year you were a play-in team, you got bounced. Next year you earn a playoff spot and you lose in the first round. Year after that, you win in the first round, and then you lose in the second round. So, like, the next natural progression here is, all right, now you're going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. But I just wonder if there's some sort of, or if there's ever a part of the season where that's going to kick in for people, where it's like, I've loved the ride to this point, but I still got to see it in the playoffs. Because that ultimately is like, we say that so much about the NBA season, right? We're constantly like, the playoffs are the thing that matters. And the players kind of tell you that the regular season doesn't matter. I'm not saying the Cavs do. The Cavs are a rare instance where, like, these guys are all pretty much playing every night. There's no load management going on. Part of that is Kenny Atkinson has managed minutes really well. But, like, because the players kind of indicate the regular season doesn't matter, we all know the end goal here is, like, the reason Jamie Bickerstaff got fired is because he couldn't do more with his team that time of year. So I just don't know if any of that is setting in for Cavs fans or if they're still riding high from the great start to the season.
I think you should still be riding high. I don't know. Like, you don't do that in, I get, like, football's a different beast, right? Like, you go week to week, you only have one game. Yeah. But, like, if you came out and had the win percentage equivalent of 21-4, like, a quarter of the way through the season, Browns fans would be ecstatic. Like, if you came out 4-1 to start the year, the conversation around the Browns would be so much different. Yeah. There shouldn't be this idea of, well, what's going to happen? Like, yeah, that's every team, every single year when you get to the playoffs or the postseason, like, that's what it is. It's let's see what happens in the playoffs. You got to get there. There should be no reason that you're doubting this team after a head coaching change. And, yeah. Like, maybe it's a boring sign.
That's part of the reason why I also wonder if that happens, because it's like, yeah, this has all been great. Kenny Atkinson's been great, whatever. Can they do this in the playoffs? Like, that's what I mean. Like, it's the unknown of the thing that we've seen. And I think it does just go back to what I said. Like, every year we know that the playoffs are the thing that we're always using as the biggest measuring stick. We like right. to use these individual games along the way, the Celtics matchups, the Knicks matchups, whatever. But we know that the playoffs are the measuring stick truly. And so there is sort of that unknown with this group and with this coach leading the charge of what that's going to look like. I also do think the 2 weeks here where it's kind of been like a game, bunch of days off, a game, has just kind of in general slowed the momentum around the Cavs. And I don't like that, but I think that's maybe why I'm asking this question.
Yeah, I mean, the schedule is absolutely terrible. Like I said, it's basically been 2 weeks off sandwiched with games against the Wizards and the Nets. Like,
right.
Congratulations.
Nobody's using horrible. Those as barometer games, right? Like, no. You're like, it's December and you're like, yeah, they blew out the Wizards and the Nets. They should do that.
Yeah, that's pretty much where you lie. And like, maybe this is the boring side of the argument, and I get it's not the most interesting thing, but like, you look at this team, they're sort of like up and coming, right? Like Donovan Mitchell would be considered
still very young.
Like
yeah.
A relatively young superstar. And then obviously, yeah, like Evan Mobley, Darius Garland, like a lot of your key pieces are younger players. There's going to be growing pains. They've gone through, yeah, they flopped against the Knicks with a very young team. They got tested by the Magic, prevailed, and then lost to the NBA champions.
That would have been a disaster if they lost that game after literally trying to get that matchup, and then they went seven games.
It would have been kind of funny. I mean, I wouldn't have been laughing. I'd have been pretty mad.
I mean, Jamie Bickerstaff obviously was going to get fired anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, that definitely. I think it would have been
canned. They wouldn't
the next
have waited
day.
So long to do it.
I just like, yes, it's going to happen. You have growing pains. They've been showing you improvement. I think not just, by the way, in the form of like the linear progression that they've been taking, as odd as it is, but like on the court, they've shown improvement. The players have progressed pretty well, especially under Kenny Atkinson this year. Like Evan Mobley looks like a different beast offensively. Darius Garland's found most of his groove back. Donovan still looks like the killer that he is. Like, yeah, this team should take a leap forward. Even if it's not by like a rounds basis, the performance is there. You can be positive with this team that they're not going to come out and give you the Knicks flop, essentially, that they gave you 2 years ago. This team is set up to compete for an NBA championship. They took a game off the Celtics last year, down two of their star players, and with JB Bickerstaff running an offense that was essentially, hey, go set a screen up there and then see what happens. Like that, it drove me nuts. It was the worst offense in all of it. It was just screen every single time with no intention. Just go off the screen and try to figure out what happens. Make it happen.
JB Bickerstaff's offense is basically just like all pick and rolls all the time. There was nothing else about it. And we know that about him, and that's why he lost his job. Guys, get a grip. Coming up in a little under an hour from now, 9:40. Up next, we will talk to Greg Swartz of Bleacher Report.